Blog Talk Radio.
Well, this is the Taz and Paula show, and I'm Paula Nunes.
And I'm Taz Powers. Paula, this morning, we are really stepping off into a kingdom of knowledge with our guest, Dr. Chilbert Renaud. He has such a passion for life. He uplifts those around him, giving them hope and success. And by the end of today's program, we indeed will be looking at our life in a much different fashion, I'm sure. Chilbert has been working as a consultant in total biology and in a biological deprogramming in Vancouver for over 6 years. He has 23 years of experience as a professional in the field of holistic health. And in 1991, by an unusual coincidence, he began to study the work of Dr. Hammer and to seek an understanding of the principles behind this approach. He studied the symbolism of illnesses, the part of the body that is affected, and the corresponding parts of the brain. He began his training in total biology with Bertrand Lemot, with whom he worked for several years at the Visa Health Center as a wellness consultant and as a teacher at the School of Naturopathic of the Upper Laurentians. Chilbert Renaud recently retrained in total biology with Claude Sabau, and with whom he pursued his training by participating in various advanced level courses and specializing seminars that are held each year. We are so lucky to have him around.
I know, it sounds like he's a book of knowledge here.
Absolutely. Well, yeah, welcome. We are so happy to have you with us, Chilbert.
I'm very pleased to be here this morning. Thank you for having me.
Can you explain to us what is total biology?
Okay. It's a tremendous body knowledge that has been gathered years after years by Dr. Claude Sabat from south of France. And the quality of Dr. Claude Sabat was to study what works to help people. And at the end, let's say, of 35 years of experience, he's been able to build a system that helps to help people. And basically, it helps to understand why a person is ill. And most of us, you know, we know so many things about health and illness, and we try to find a way to help a person. And what he discovered, Claude Sabat, and also all that didn't stop with just him, but he studied from also other mentors. But the main thinking is, in order to help a person to heal, we need to understand why the disease came. And we always say a disease is the brain's best solution at the time to keep the person alive. So we need to understand what happened in the private person's life in order to make that disease a good brain solution.
So,
how do you step off into this work? What direction? I mean, how did you possibly go in this direction? What stimulated this?
Yeah, it started in '91 when had a chance to be to edit a series of conferences that has been done translated from German to French, because my background and French Canadian, and for a year I've been correcting that editing, and I got in touch with the work of Dr. Hammer from Germany, who established a connection between the brain, the body part involved in the disease, and the type of emotional conflict behind a condition. And at that time, I was naturopath in a clinic in Quebec, Canada, and I tried to help with that, and I understood a little bit better the problems of the people because of that. But it didn't give me the depth that Dr. Sabat brought a little bit later with his concept of total biology. But the reason I came to that is I stopped to sell products. I stopped to sell homeopathy. I stopped to sell all kind of natural medicine products to help people. And I focused on the emotional trauma behind the disease. And I saw people shifting in their health much quicker than with products. And then later, I work as a team to help a person to heal. So let's say you have a person that is already in the process with this doctor, with a natural medicine doctor, a homeopath. And me, I focus on the emotional trauma, and together we are a teamwork to facilitate and optimizing the chance of the person to heal. And it's what really brought me into it is I thought I could make a difference in the person's healing process.
Did you find that you use this for yourself as well?
Yeah, of course. I started with myself because when you study with Dr. Claude Sabat and you go through a series of workshops and you're obliged to go through your own story. And when I say your own story, it talks about three generations before in your family. That means our parents, grandparents, and great-grandparents. So this obliges us to build a family tree. So finally, we realize that we are the fruit of a tree, the previous generations. And it's very interesting because there's a woman in France for 40 years, she built family trees to help her clients in psychoanalysis. And by building the family tree, she realized that some of her clients healed just by making connections. And it's extremely amazing.
Do you start with the great grandparents and come that way? Or do you start from
yes.
now?
Yes. I start from now, and I go above. I establish how many siblings dad and mom had on each side. And I try to establish the birth order number of everyone. And I try to take a look of, I am in link with who above. Because if I am a number three in my family tree, in my own family, that means who is number three on my mother's side? Who is number three on dad's side? And you go above like that. But sometimes you see in a family, you give a name to a child. Let's say you say, oh, this child will be John after my grandfather. Now we will discover that we ask that little John to give us a little bit that great-grandfather or that grandfather. So finally, that little John, as he grows up, he may develop some qualities of that grandfather, but he may also develop some pathology, some disease, or some conflict that were also in touch with that grandfather. So when you establish that family tree, you discover that you carry some, what we call the invisible family loyalties. And it's very powerful.
I do not know where my grandparents were in the family tree.
Yes, but so what, it's a good question. What I do and what I say to people doesn't matter. We work with what we know. Because what we know is quite often enough to go forward. But we use everything that we know. So most of us know a little bit about our grandparents, but rarely above. And many of my clients, they know just about their parents. So I always work with what we have. If I can push a little bit more the knowledge and the awareness of the family tree, I will do that with delight because we discover something extremely useful in the healing process.
Now, when you heal, when you have a client and you work with them, and their issues become resolved, or whatever you want to, whatever word you want to use here. Does that also help resolve issues in maybe parents or grandchildren or anything like that? I mean, once one person connects in, does that mean that they also have success with other people in your family?
It's like if we're all connected within the family tree, and we say from brain to brain, we're first very connected with our mother and then our parents. And then our siblings. So when we become aware of something and we clear a conflict simply by being aware, by making the right connection, and sometimes by having the capacity to let go, yes, it brings an input and it opens some possibilities to facilitate a better connection between these people. And sometimes some people, they feel better. But of course, the main beneficiary is the one who does the work. Mm-hmm. But for example, if I am a mother of a child, and my child, let's say that child is below 10 years old, most of the time, as a mother or as a parent, I know what happened in the earlier life of the child or what happens to the parents before the child was born. When mom was pregnant, or a little bit before the conception of the child, all that has an impact on the on our behavior and our conflicts in life. And when, let's say, the mother remembers that she has a terrible conflict while she was pregnant, and she remembers that she can't make the connection, and then she tells the story to the child, "My darling, it's something that happens to mommy, not to you." Because you will understand there's a law that we'll talk a little bit later in the show, that what happens to the parents while mom is pregnant with the baby, including the first year of the child's life, the first law is the psychological and emotional conflicts of the parents during that time become the biological conflict of the child. That doesn't mean the child will be ill with that, but that means it may be a programming, like a kind of a track that can contribute to attract the same type of problems later in the child's life.
So when a child is given away at birth or given away after the first week, that could be an emotional trauma?
It's the worst trauma that a child can experience. In biology, we say being given to adoption is like if I start my life completely in autonomy from dad and mom, completely independent. And at a biological level, when we say biological, we mean physiological. Mm-hmm. The automatic brain experiences a tremendous stress, because if we are not in contact with our mother, we have a risk to die constantly. So that child, before he meets the parent, he experiences a terrible stress. Yes, it's very important stress, and you're right.
Now, in my family, I'm the firstborn. My husband was the firstborn. His parents were the firstborn. And so does that compound on my firstborn? I mean, he has that all the way up.
Yeah, absolutely. We can say your firstborn isn't, and when we say firstborn, we have to include all the miscarriage, abortion, stillbirth, okay? So we consider that too, okay? Because sometimes we work with a number one and we discover that he's a number three. Because the mother had two miscarriages, okay? So we count that. And because we can't cheat with the automatic brain, because the automatic brain has recorded everything that happened. I give you an example of a mother. She lost the first baby. She's very sad. She lost the second one. She's almost inconsolable. And then a third one comes, and that third one is alive. well. But that third one, he also carries the memory of the two previous pregnancies. And you will discover that sometimes a child that comes after two miscarriages or abortion, sometimes is a child that has the feeling to fulfill two or three pairs of shoes. He's never satisfied with his own work. No, of course, because he has to replace the two previous ones on the top of himself. So, we discovered that with people who are never satisfied with their work or with themselves. And when we discover that, curiously, the person starts to become very relaxed, because now what I know in my consciousness, in my awareness, does not program as much as before.
Oh, I see. And then when we're looking back on family trees, there's a lot of times that we don't know any of this.
Yeah, sure. But we work with what we know. And sometimes just writing the family tree is extremely therapeutic. It's extremely healing, because we establish a link between us and our ancestors. And it's very rare that we do that. And you know, in healing, most of the time, we work with the person that comes right here, right now, and we give something to heal the symptoms. But when we consider the person as a whole, we discovered many things. And when we discover all these things, sometimes the person heals 50%. And then when you give the right medication, it optimizes the healing. And some diseases are almost difficult to heal, but you can get a fantastic, let's say, relief, because you understand why is there. And sometimes an understanding can bring 20% of healing, sometimes 50%, sometimes 75%, and sometimes 100%. So we do the best as we can with each client, and it's one-on-one.
So do I know we heal like our people above us, below us, but what about our siblings? Do we also heal the siblings?
Yeah, when we say healing, me, I don't say healing the siblings or above as below, but we contribute to facilitate a better connection. And sometimes when we talk about healing, we talk more about emotional trauma that is in the family tree. If I clear that emotional trauma, it contributes to the well-being of people. It's not about healing. But sometimes some people experience healing. But the person who works for himself or for herself, that person gets the beneficial of it first. And quite often that person experiences a great percentage of healing, if it's not a full healing regarding the meaning of the conflict.
Jaber, is it tangible? In other words, the person that you're working with, can they actually feel the difference in their body after they go through the process with you?
Oh, yes. Yes, quite often. The most important moment of awareness here is when you discover that the illness that you carry, you didn't catch it. We don't catch illnesses. We express it in our body. Okay? And we say, one day I go through something that is very difficult for me and I can't find a solution. And at the time, my automatic brain downloads the emotional trauma from my mind because I can't handle that properly. I'm overwhelmed. And my brain has to store that into the subconscious. But at the same time, in the corresponding body part with the type of conflict that I'm going through. So, for example, if a woman who has intraductal breast cancer, for example. We know in biology, breast the conflict regarding breast is about home nest. What is happening in my home? So my children, my mother, my partner, my husband, my lover, okay? So every time that a woman has a breast condition, we need to find what is going on in her home nest. We need to make the woman talk about that. And if the person can't find a solution, the brain has to store the conflict in that corresponding body part. Okay? So this is why when you start to work with a person with such a condition, we have a map in our mind to go directly into the home nest, contradiction, stories, conflicts, to make the woman talk about that, because there's something that she's been unable to resolve that was so overwhelming emotionally at the time.
So I know a lot of times when women have lost a child, the breast cancer comes.
Yes, it's very, very frequent. But what is interesting here, it changes the whole approach with breast cancer, because it's not about plastic, it's not about diet, it's not about Coca-Cola or wine. It's about the way I experience my daily life. How do I handle my conflict in my life? All what we do as a proper diet, it's a great contributor to maintain our health. But if we don't care about the emotional, we say in biology, the emotional trauma leads the way. The conflict leads the way. So you see many places in the world, people are very healthy. They take care of their health, absolutely. But why do they have the same disease than most of other people? Why when we study Canada and United States, we study different groups of different habits. We have very healthy people and very, let's say, people who are not really healthy, but the percentage of heart attack is almost the same. Why? It's not about cholesterol, fat, wine. Yes, it's a contributor, it's a factor, but the real conflict behind heart attack, it's a loss of territory, a loss of something that I didn't want to lose. It's something very important for me. And that's the type of conflict that we need to talk about when we meet with a person who has a tendency to have a myocardial infarct, a heart attack. So it's a tremendous body knowledge. And in order to know that, to study that, we need to study where does that come from. And you have very good people before us that have discovered these things. And they are quite challenged by the authorities and some government in their countries. They try to shut them down because it's extremely revolutionary as approach.
Now, my husband has heart trouble, and all his father, his grandfather, and all his uncles all have heart problems. So this is, they've all have this feeling of losing something.
And when we talk about heart, generally we see the main conflict is I fight to preserve my territory. Okay? And in order to say that, we need to consider, most of the time, when a person has a problem in the body, it's because it's the type of person that doesn't talk about its conflict. Okay, and you will understand that in healing, 60% of the healing is to talk about the conflict. Yes, but all these men, for example, who have heart condition, they never talk about their conflict. They look very serious. They are dealing with something very important every day, and when you ask them a question, everything is fine. you discover that in healing, if they don't talk, they swallow their disease and they die with their disease. So the first thing to do is to make a person talk, but make the person talk about the right thing. And it's important because with the heart, let's say a person has a heart attack and survives the heart attack very well. But from the moment that person had the heart attack, that person starts to be very anxious because at any moment I have a fear that I will have another heart attack and I may die. Yes, but if you say, oh, you had a heart attack. Okay, what did you go through a little bit before? What was your conflict? And finally, the person becomes aware that I had that heart attack because I didn't clear certain things in my life. And now when you talk about it, it's like if all the stress behind start to vanish. And most of the time, that person goes much better in life, and that doesn't erase the past. But quite often, the person doesn't have a heart attack after that because that person talks about the problems. And we say a disease is an expression of our daily life conflict that we don't even talk about. We are sick as our secrets. This is why the first thing is to talk.
Wow. Chabert, what about someone that has a degenerative hip?
Okay, so that's a very important question. When we talk about degenerative, we talk about a loss of bone density, loss of calcium, loss of minerals in the body tissue. Okay? So we need to understand two important things here in order to talk about degenerative hips. What is the meaning of hips? Okay. In biology, when we say biology, that's the physiology of the brain. Hips have something to do with opposition in life. I'm in opposition with somebody. I disagree with somebody. We say long time ago, I disagree with my mother. I didn't agree completely with my mom regarding certain things, but I couldn't oppose to my mother as a child. Okay? And then degeneration of the tissue is linked with feeling devalued, feeling not good enough regarding that meaning. So that means a person today that has degenerative hips is a person that goes through certain conflict where I can't oppose. I would like to say no. I would like to say I disagree, but I shut my mouth and I have a nice smile. Okay? That is today. But long time ago, it was in opposition with my mother. And you have, most of the time, people who have degenerative hips, they are very nice people. Yes, but nice people, they don't say what they think. Yeah. You know, we have a doctor in Vancouver. He wrote a book, When the Body Says No. And in that book, he said, in my waiting room, I have just nice people. People who talk, who verbalize, even if it doesn't please to others, at least they don't take it in. Huh? When we give an issue outside, it doesn't get in the tissue. So this is why verbalizing, talking is so important. And when I say verbalizing, we don't attack others. We don't talk against mom or dad, but we say how we felt at the time, how we felt with our partner when the partner has been, let's say, very mean to us and we didn't say a word, okay? Or because sometimes you go working and your boss, your supervisor says something, and because it's your boss, you say nothing. Yes, but you swallow it. And a disease is quite often an accumulation of many frustrations in life. And suddenly, we have a boomerang effect.
So when you verbalize, or if you even verbalize internally and realize what's taking place, do you still have some kind of release?
Yes, absolutely. Yes. But sometimes a good word is very useful. You know, in New York, I had a client. He had a, what we call a cutaneous T-cell lymphoma. That means it's a kind of cancer of the skin.
Mm-hmm.
And this came not long after that he discovered that his wife cheated on him. Okay? And this man, he's 6'6", 220 pounds. He's very strong. And he wanted to kill the man who cheated on his with his wife, you know. And because he had a one-year-old daughter, he didn't do a thing. He swallowed everything. And a few years later, he developed that cutaneous T-cell lymphoma. So we worked very well on the conflict. And then he understood everything, but the condition didn't leave his arms. He had also on his legs. So I recommended him to go to the gym because he's like, he's so strong, he needs to verbalize to the sandbag. So his duty was to punch the bag and to say to the bag how he felt at the time when he's being cheated on. And, you know, 2 months later, all what he had on his arms had disappeared. Okay? Because he needed to verbalize enough by punching the handbag. For him, that was it. Okay? You have some people, just an awareness from within is enough. But some, it's not enough. They need to say something outside. Okay? This is why, you know, Carl Gustav Jung in psychoanalysis said, what comes back to your awareness does not come back as a destiny. Huh? When you have a chance to talk, to connect, it optimizes the chance of awareness.
What I've noticed with older people,
yes,
they've kept things inside for years. And when they get older, they say whatever they please.
Yeah, yes. And this, sometimes when you meet with somebody that says what he thinks, sometimes you don't like that because it's embarrassing. You know, that person always talks. Yes, but at least it doesn't take it in. Okay? And what we need to find is when is the good time to talk about these things. It's at least we find a way in our daily life where we can say some words to unload it.
Well, maybe the elderly have so much inside that they have to be able to voice now that they're older.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. I give you an example of a stroke, okay, or even an aneurysm, okay. When we get older, you see many people died with a stroke, but in biology, a stroke is always a loss of territory at an intellectual level. For example, I have a friend who died with a stroke. But this man, he was a director of a school. Huh? And we use the brain to think and to command people. So this guy told people for 40 years what to do. And then when he retired at 65, he became the chief of the volunteers in a hospital. And for 10 years, he told people what to do. And then when he retired from that, he went home and he lived with his sister who told him what to do. Not long after, he couldn't stand that. Okay? And a little bit later, he died from a stroke. And a stroke in biology is a loss of territory at an intellectual level.
So it's similar to heart problems, only at a higher level? Or?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. You'll see, when we talk about biology, we talk about what is very basic in life. And the automatic brain in us is connected with the basic things of life. And that brain is responsible to keep us alive from moment to moment. It's not
now,
the brain that thinks. Yes, go ahead, please.
Do you believe in reincarnation? Do we come back again to go through our biology problems, our trauma?
Now you talk about something that I would say that overlaps total biology. But you know, I work with people with different beliefs. Some are Mormon, Jehovah's Witness, Buddhist, Christian, Catholic, East Indian. You have all kinds of religions. So when you want to help a person, we need to stick to the biological level, which can suit every belief. But now, if somebody needs to talk about reincarnation, I can say, I believe in reincarnation. I can say that with the person. But in order to, let's say, when we bring the concept of reincarnation, we bring the concept of dharma and karma. And it's not by accident that we are born in a family, in the family tree, with that kind of patterns and pathologies and problems, also qualities. So if we bring a kind of karma, we need to be born in the exact family in correspondence with that. Okay? So, but in biology we say we don't know if it's true, all this exists really. But one thing is sure, we have a father, a mother, 4 grandparents, 8 great-grandparents. Let's work on that. And if we can optimize or help the person to clear some things and to heal, it's already fantastic. And that person is free to believe or not in reincarnation.
Now, speaking of religion, especially in these times, people break the religion that their ancestors have been in for years.
Yes.
And they become a different religion than their parents, grandparents,
yes,
and so on. Does this have anything to do with what you're working with?
That may have something to do, but me, the way I will work, I will try to find why the person changed. What happened in the person's life to change? Because we know in biology, one of big challenge that we can give to our ancestor is to change our faith, our belief and religion. That is very important. And if we do that, it is because, I give you an example. You have my background is Quebec, Catholic Christian, and you see some people, they change completely. They don't want to be Catholic Christian anymore. When you study the family tree, you discover that in that family, they had a lot of abuse through priests, through church, through a different convent. So you understand now that the descendants of the people who have suffered because of church at the moment, they reject church. It's the solution of the family tree because they suffered. Okay? For another family, let's say you have a family, they are pure Christian, and you have somebody that becomes Buddhist suddenly. When we study Buddhist, death doesn't exist the same way it exists in Christianity. Quite often we discover that a person has never been able to grieve the loss of somebody dearly loved. And now I became Buddhist this is my way to survive, because death does not exist in my consciousness and I'm constantly in contact with the person who died. Okay? So we can find many reasons behind a behavior, behind the change of an attitude. But quite often, it's in link with what happened to our ancestors.
So if your ancestor went through some type of trauma because of their religion, you may change at the point that you're at.
Yeah. Yeah, it may be a factor. You know, when you see, I have clients, they have been completely mistreated threatened in their family, in their in their religion and their faith. Of course, their children, they reject that religion. Okay, it's not because we think the person has an act of awareness and now the person has an awakening and I wake to something new. Yes, a percentage of that is true, but most of the time also we have a programming behind that opens that possibility. Otherwise, we're very focused, like our ancestors.
You have a lot to look at when you're looking at it.
Yes, absolutely. But the first thing, whatever we know, we work with the person in front of us. And what I like to say, for every individual that comes to me, 50% is not for illness, it's to clear some possible patterns, some possible programming for illnesses later. So we work right here, right now. And another 50% of people is because they have a condition or a behavior that is very embarrassing for them. And what we do as a basis, we build a family tree. We try to find what happened to dad and mom when mom was pregnant with the child. And then we write a life timeline of the major dramatic events of my life from now backward to the moment I was born. And I try to use these three components to help a person, to make the person talk. And most of the time, when I use these three things, I find everything that I need to help the person.
Is this similar to NLP?
Not 100%, but in total biology, there are different techniques of NLP that are used. Yes, absolutely. Yes, because NLP, it's a word, but NLP has been created after the study of Milton Erickson, Virginia Satir. Okay, so before NLP, it was a therapeutic psychological approach. Huh? So, of course, in that work, we use a little bit of NLP, a little bit of psychology, psychoanalysis, and natural medicine, and the law of the nature, because it's based on the common sense of the daily life. So it's a little bit of everything. And we try to use the approach that will help the most the person that is in front of us.
So back to cancer. Does it depend? Each type of cancer would be treated differently depending on what part of the body that it is attacking?
Yeah, absolutely. For example, if I have lung alveoli cancer, most of the time is a conflict of the fear of dying. So, and tuberculosis would be the repair phase of the fear of dying. So that is one of the discovery of Dr. Hammer. When you take a look around the world, you have so many wars right now around the world, and as soon as a war starts to fade away, to end, you see a beginning of tuberculosis. And we think it's a contagion. No. Dr. Hammer discovered that after a lung cancer, during the fear of dying because of the war, I developed a lung alveoli cancer. For the brain, lung alveoli cancer at the beginning is like a turbo function to breathe better because I fear to die. So the fear to die is recorded at the alveoli sac in the lung. So when the war is over, I don't have that fear to die anymore. Now I can go in the repair phase and the brain will use TB bacillus to repair, to break down the tumor in the lung, and then the person will heal from lung cancer. So, but if the conflict of the war has lasted too long, it's possible that the repair phase of lung cancer makes the person dying. Yes, sometimes people, they die from a too important repair phase. And that's the discovery of Dr. Hammer.
media that we listen to, the news, the television, radio, has a lot to do with our actual health, it sounds like. How much we believe what we hear.
But what is important is to use everything that we know. Okay? Me, in my work, I try to not to reject anything, but I try to give the right proportion to everything. And I try to bring also what else I would say to a person that has a, let's say, lung cancer. Okay, you did this and that. You keep your chemotherapy. This is excellent, for example, to slow down the growth of a tumor. Yes, but did you work on this? Okay. So, for example, if I work with a person who has lung cancer, okay, sometimes that person who comes to see me is already on the chemotherapy protocol, okay, to control the growth of the lung tumor. Huh? My work is not to interfere with the medical work that is in the process, but I will optimize the person's chance to heal by finding what happened in order to have that lung tumor. And when we find out, quite often the person heals very quickly. It accelerates the healing. And finally, the medical would say, oh, chemotherapy works. Okay? And most of the people who have a great success with chemotherapy is because at the same time they had the chance to solve the problem underneath their condition. Okay, so chemotherapy gives an extra time. Otherwise, sometimes the tumor would grow too quick and the person has a chance to die quicker. Mm-hmm. So, and this is why in biology, we don't interfere with medicine, even if it's natural or official medicine. You just work on the emotional trauma, and it's already a wonderful approach to optimize the person's chances of healing.
Chabert, what if someone has asthma? What are you looking at there?
It's very interesting. It's a little bit challenging at the same time, because every time we talk about asthma, we need to talk about bronchi, the bronchi tubes. And the conflict behind the bronchi tube is what we call a human conflict in the territory, which means disputes, argument, criticism, okay, with others. And asthma is every time that I meet today, I meet such a stress with somebody in my perimeter, bang, I have an asthma attack. But I need to understand why. Where does that come from, asthma, in the programming? And that is a little bit tricky if I explain to you that right now. But I will go forward if you wish. We need to consider what happened to the parents when mom was pregnant with the child. And quite often behind asthma, you discover a story where the father and or the mother wanted to be at two places at the same time. I give you an example. It's sometimes I need to check if my father, maybe he had a mistress. Maybe he wanted to be with her while he was with my mother. Or when he's with his mistress, maybe he wants to be with my mother. Okay? And is that the fact of I want to be two places at the same time in the programming? We forget that, but the brain records that when mom is pregnant with me. And then after that, later, when I develop certain conflicts in my territory, argument, it activates a program from a long time ago. Okay. So, and you have some people who heal from asthma by being aware of that. And certainly, one of the important things is you work on the here and now with the people that you're in conflict, that every time that you come into a room, you feel pissed off because that person is there. You don't want to share the same air. You don't want to breathe the same air as that person. Okay, that is a good trigger for asthma. Okay? A disagreement with somebody, a trigger for asthma. So behind asthma, we say, what happened just before your crisis? And you try to make the person talk about the stories or the events that has preceded the asthma attack, if I can say that like that.
Wow. Yeah. Oh, that's very interesting. Now, do you work with people who have learning problems?
Oh, you call that children? Learning problem?
Uh-huh, learning problems.
Oh, learning, yes, of course. It's very interesting because when we talk about,
last year I was here in the Bay Area to give a workshop on kids learning difficulties and kid illnesses in the eyes of total biology. And we go through all kind of learning difficulties. And in order to help a child, we study what happened to the parents when the mother is pregnant with the child. And we discover many things. And for that, we can make also many associations with what happened at the delivery during the pregnancy. Because for the mother, when she's pregnant, the delivery represents the final the result of the exam. So that means she will prepare herself for during 9 months, and then she delivered the baby, and that's the result of the exam. Is it a success or a failure to her? Okay, and you have some women, they will go to different courses to optimize the chance of a better delivery. And some women, the delivery would be fantastic because of that. And some other, the delivery would be a terrible drama, even if they had a very nice preparation. So what is the impact on the child? Okay, for the child, it means that even if I study, I will fail. So you have children sometimes in their lives, they never want to study because they're going to fail. They just repeat in their psyche what happens to the mother during the 9 months of pregnancy. Okay, and we say, for example, during the delivery, the labor of the mother corresponds to the work or the school work. Okay, so how it is for the mother, it would be like that for the child. Okay, so you have some mothers, they deliver the baby in 5 to 20 minutes. So it's very quick. Yes, that's going to give a child that when it's time to work, he wants to do everything quick. He will have a synthesis. Yes, just because he repeats what happened, okay, at the moment of delivery.
Oh, that's interesting.
You have many situations. Yeah. A last example, I had a child, he had diarrhea just before going to an exam. He was so nervous, diarrhea. Yes, but the mother had an enema just before her delivery, and it was tragic for her. Okay? So, and the child expresses that in his biology. And a little story just to show you the interest of study what happens during the pregnancy is I have a woman, she comes at me because her 4 years old, 4.5 years old daughter cannot quit diapers. She can be, let's say, playing naked in the house, and when it's time to pee and poop, she needs the diaper. And she said, Mom, give me the diaper. And she came to see me, the mother, for the purpose of to help the daughter to quit diapers. So in my office, the daughter is not there. I have just the mother. And we study
the 4 years and a half child's life. We find nothing there to justify the need to keep diaper. And then I asked the mother what happened during the pregnancy. It appeared that when she's 8 months pregnant, she went to the third floor into the attic to pick up something there or to play something. And on her way down, she fell on the ground from one level and she almost, you know, she had a terrible risk to die or to damage the baby that was in her womb. And finally, she went to hospital and she's been really reprimanded by the doctors and nurse that you never have to climb in a stair or in a stepladder when you're pregnant like that because you put the survival of your child at risk. And finally, after, let's say, 1 hour of talk, when we analyze everything, I asked her, can you tell me what did you do when you went into the attic? And she went to place all the diapers. And when she said that she went to place all the diapers, she became totally red. And she realized at that moment that when she was pregnant, she was so guilty. She felt so guilty because she felt that when her daughter asked her for diapers, she said, Mom, you did well to place the diapers that day. Okay?
Wow.
And the following week, that daughter quit diapers. As soon as the mother had access to that memory and she has been able to forgive herself, the daughter doesn't need to secure her mother with that anymore. Okay? So, and if with children, they don't make blockages. Okay? As soon as the parents understand something and they explain to the child, and quite often you explain to the child when he sleeps or sometimes when the child plays with his toys, you say it like that, you tell the story, and the brain of the child listens the most when the child plays or sleeps. So it's excellent, you know. And I have many stories like that with children or with learning difficulties. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. We only have 2 minutes left. Do you want to tell everyone about your workshops that are coming up?
Yes, they are a little bit far from here, but I will give 2 workshops, one at the end of March and one at the beginning of April. At the end of March is all the problems related to the weight management, being overweight, being too thin, bulimia, anorexia. So people who want to lose weight, it's an excellent workshop. And I explain all the psychological trauma behind being overweight. And it's extremely useful to lose weight. And then the following weekend would be a total biology level 2. Everybody who attend the workshop on overweight, they are welcome to attend level 2 at the time. Because in overweight, I cover everything that is covered in total biology level 1. And here in the Bay Area, I have a sponsor, a woman who takes care of organizing everything. And I can give you her name or her telephone number if you wish.
Yes.
Yes, go ahead.
Okay. Her name is Miss Ardella Nathanael. Let's say you just say Miss Ardella. And her phone number is 415-499-8027.
And that's in San Francisco?
Yes, it's in San Rafael.
San Rafael.
Yeah.
Give the number one more time.
415-499-8027.
Now, if you want to read more about our guest today and more about the guests that we've had and the upcoming guest, go on to TazAndPaulaShow.com. That's our website, T-A-Z-Z and A-N-D, PaulaShow.com. And you can read much more about our guests that we have, and we have a lot of fun articles. And our interview with you today has been a wonderful opening for people to look at things differently.
I was very pleased to talk with you, and I'm very pleased to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
Oh, you're welcome, and thank you.
We enjoyed you so very much.
I'm always very pleased to share what I know, and it's not what we know that counts; it's what we do with what we know now.
Oh, that's perfect. That's a perfect ending. Thank you so much.
Have a wonderful day.
You too. Bye bye.
Bye bye.
Bye.